Yep. All right. Thanks, Doug.
Join me in welcoming.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, I can see my office right across in the building right here, so it feels like home. I'm happy to speak on this topic today, Battle of the Chosin Reservoir and the Korean War. And if you're wondering how I came to this topic as somebody who's an employment lawyer and wasn't born until 20 years after the Korean War. My family and I took a trip to Washington, D.C. a couple years ago. We were at Arlington National Cemetery, and if you haven't been there, you definitely should make a trip to go there. This is a very impactful place. And I was there with my children. I wanted to convey to them the same message about how important this part of our U.S. history is, honoring our military veterans and the sacrifice they made for our country. So as we were walking along the road there at the cemetery, I saw this gravestone had a Medal of Honor marker. So I figured this was somebody that I could look up on the internet and tell my kids about his specific story, just so that they had a personal connection with some of the people that were there. This individual named William Winder. Beautiful setting here in Arlington Cemetery. Where we saw his gravestone. And when I looked at this picture, I was struck by how young he was, right? This is an individual who won a Medal of Honor December 2nd, 1950, in this battle, Chosin Reservoir. He gave his life, died in the battle. He was a sergeant over a platoon that was assaulted. They were incredibly outnumbered by the Chinese forces. And he was wounded by a grenade, but kept instructing his men on maintaining their defensive positions and staying calm, staying where they need to be, not up their perimeter, not being overrun. He was wounded again in the leg. He couldn't even stand, but he crawled around this perimeter, telling his men what to do, where to be, to stay strong, and giving them encouragement as they were able to hold their position and hold their line. In this town called Udomni, which I had never heard of, in North Korea, in the middle of nowhere, ended up giving his life for our country. Ultimately passed out, conscious, and died from loss of blood. And I was struck by the sacrifice and commitment that this individual could give. And when I saw his picture, he looked like a kid, right? I think he's younger than probably all of us here. Just amazing sacrifice and fortitude. And my children were impressed with this story. So I started studying the Korean War, and it's a forgotten war in many ways. It's called the Forgotten War a lot. It kind of somehow got lost in between World War II and Vietnam, and it didn't last very long. It was never officially declared a war. It was a police action, is what they called it. There was no official declaration of war. And in fact, the Korean War technically has never ended. At the end of the war in 1953, they signed an armistice to have a ceasefire, but they've never signed a peace treaty. Turns out that the topic is kind of timely. All these are headlines about the Korean War that have just been issued in the last week. So if you pay attention to the news, Donald Trump, President Trump, has had summits with North Korea. North Korea has had summits with South Korea. North Korea wants to sign a peace treaty. The reason they do is because if there's a peace treaty, they can argue that U.S. troops should leave South Korea, so we're not that eager to have to sign the peace treaty yet. But technically, this war, in some respects, has never ended. The other reason why you see news about Korea lately is that there are remains of soldiers that were lost, many, many in this particular battle, the Chosin Reservoir, who we are still recovering. There are recovery efforts and attempts to find these soldiers who have been missing in action for 70 years, or presumed killed in action. We know that they've died. Never been able to locate their remains and bring them home. And now the North Korean government is working with the United States over the last 10 years, to recover some of those bodies. A brief introduction on the initial phase of the war to how we ended up at the Battle of the Chosin Reservoir. There's kind of four phases to the Korean War. First phase is North Korea attacks in June 25th, 1950. They started attacking South Korea. This famous line of latitude, the 38th parallel, is where after World War II, Russia and the United Nations decided that they would divide up Korea. And North Korea had maintained that line until they attacked, and they were effective. Their attack within days had taken almost all of Korea. The South Korean army was not well prepared for the assault, and they were able to maintain this tiny little perimeter in this town, Pusan, down in the south, and almost lost all of the Korean Peninsula forces. So the United Nations Security Council, in their first real test since the United Nations was formed at the end of World War II, voted to have a response. And so, although we think of the Korean War as a U.S. war, technically it was a action by the United Nations, and there were other troops from other countries involved in the war besides the U.S. who the Security Council voted for us to again participate in the battle and try to defend South Korea and take back land. The commander of the U.N. forces and famous U.S. General Douglas MacArthur developed a strategy to land instead of trying to fight our way north from this small perimeter in Pusan. His strategy was to land way up here at this port in Incheon, which had, it was an interesting port because the tide was so dramatically different between high and low tide that the North Koreans did not believe that we could do an amphibious landing there because the timing of the tide was so, there was such a small window for you to get ships in there before the tide was too low and the ships couldn't. But they timed it perfectly, they struck when forces attacked at Incheon. North Koreans weren't prepared at all. They didn't expect the attack there. So within 10 days, just as dramatically as North Korea had conquered South Korea, the UN forces had conquered Pyongyang and the capital of North Korea and pushed almost all the way up to China. So it was moving very rapidly. We attacked Incheon in September, and by the end of October, people were talking about coming home by Christmas, and some had even thought we might get home by Thanksgiving. And MacArthur decided that he wanted to push all the way to the border here with China, which was marked by this river called the Yalu River. MacArthur was very keen on doing this, and he was basically untouchable, MacArthur, after this landing at Incheon. It was a stroke of genius to land at Incheon and pull off the operation the way he did. And so he had a lot of capital, right, to do what he wanted to do. Strategically, he was basically a celebrity. Everybody in the United States loved him. And President Truman was worried. Because the more we talked about pushing the Yalu River and pushing the border to China, the more he was worried that China would get involved. And he did not want to get into a war with China as well as North Korea. After the battle of the Chosin Reservoir, we'll get into detail on, North Korea was able to push back. And there was ultimately a stalemate that ended with this armistice. And so, very rapid change in the first 6 months of the war, and kind of a stalemate for the remaining 2.5 years. So by the time we had pushed this far north, some troops actually pushed all the way to the Yalu River in some places. We were in November 1950. We were essentially in this position for where the troops had taken. There is this Chosin Reservoir in the middle of nowhere. The terrain there is just barren. Mountainous terrain, very little population, very small villages, kind of subsistence farming is basically all that exists out there. And our military troops were there and with the plan to push all the way to the Yalu River. MacArthur met Truman. Truman was worried, and so he wanted a meeting with MacArthur to tell him, hey, we got to kind of ease off our rhetoric for attacking China because I'm worried they're going to come into the war. Charlie says, okay, fine, I'll meet you, but I'm not coming to Washington. You have to come meet me out at Wake Island. And Truman was frustrated by this, right? He said, his quote was, when does the king have to go meet the prince, where the prince is, right? He called MacArthur a prima donna brass hat, did not like him at all. when they met, he ended up going to Wake Island, Truman, and when he met him, MacArthur did not salute Truman, even though he was his commander-in-chief. He just shook his hand. You could just look at him, right? In fact, these pictures are great because he looks like I'm awesome and I know exactly what I'm doing, and he looks great, right? I'm worried about what's going to happen. And that's basically what was going on. MacArthur ensured Truman that if the Chinese got involved, there would be a great slaughter. The United States would demolish their forces. He was a brilliant strategist at times in his career, but he was, by all accounts, just arrogant in this situation. He had such success at Incheon, he was kind of caught up in himself, and maybe a little bit racist how he viewed the Chinese, and certainly, if not racist, he underestimated their fighting. So here we are, November 25th to the 27th at this Chosen Reservoir. You can see a picture today. It's actually very difficult to get a picture of the Chosen Reservoir today because I thought everything was on the internet. Turns out a lot of stuff about North Korea is not on the internet. I looked really long and hard before I found this picture, and I'm pretty sure this is the Chosen Reservoir today, but it could be somewhere in Nevada. But if you look at it, it's a pleasant-looking place, right? Pleasant-looking place. This is what it looked like in the actual picture at the time of the attack. Different season of the year, right? Different angle. This is obviously aerial, where the other one was on the ground. See, it's a cold, barren, kind of treacherous, difficult terrain, right, that we had our troops to fight in. Not a welcoming or inviting. There, right? Look at the terrain. This is super difficult terrain, if you can see, to have ground troops marching through. You have tanks and other things, heavy equipment that just difficult to move through this kind of thing. This is a lot of detail, but basically, the sum total is we had about 30,000 troops there. They were kind of divided into two big groups. One was the Marines. We had the 1st Marine Division, celebrated Marine unit that was there. The other one was we had the 7th Infantry Division of the U.S. Army. They were in a much smaller force than the Marines. Okay, the Marines were the bulk of who we had chosen. About 30,000 total troops were in this vicinity. What we didn't know was that the Chinese were there. The Chinese had come in to Korea with a force of about 120,000 right around Chosin. But in fact, in North Korea overall, they had something close to 500,000 troops that they sent in. So our troops here were outnumbered just at the reservoir 4-1. Very cold circumstances. Some of the pictures are just fascinating. Wearing a lot of gear, but they're freezing. So cold, all the batteries froze. Batteries on their radios froze, so they didn't have good communication unless they had a landline. The batteries on their vehicles froze, so the vehicles wouldn't start. If they oiled their weapons too much, you know, you're always supposed to keep your weapons clean, but it turns out if you oiled your weapons too much, cleaning them here, the oil would freeze and the weapon wouldn't fire. The firing pins on their weapons would freeze and they wouldn't fire. So a lot of these troops didn't have, even if they had weapons and ammunition, they couldn't use them because they were. They had trouble trying to find ways to heat up their food. Even something simple like going to the bathroom was risky because it was almost, in some places in this battle, 40 degrees below zero with wind chill below that. It's a barren, cold, windswept place. So if you take off this gear to even use the restroom, you have to hurry because you frostbite. They tried to dig foxholes, but they couldn't dig into the ground because the ground was too hard. So a lot of the embankments and defensive positions, they just had to find natural depressions in the ground. Very difficult to dig. Although, by most accounts, after the first Chinese assault, when they were overwhelmed and it was terrible fighting, they found a way to dig deeper into it. So here's kind of an aerial picture of the reservoir. Okay, and this is the town Yudongni. We had the Marines over here on the west side, and the Marines were on the east side too. the Army was in what they call a regimental combat team. The reason they call it that is because it's not a normal regiment. It's kind of built together, a team built together out regiment strength. So there's a couple of divisions here. They started getting intelligence, hey guys, there's a lot of Chinese here. There are Chinese in the area. We're worried about them. We think they're in this neighborhood of Yudongni. So we're going to move these Marines from the 5th over here to be with the 7th. And we're going to move this army up this side where we don't think there's as many Chinese. So you end up with all the bulk of our Marines here in this area, about 15 to 20,000 troops from these two Marine regiments on the west side. And on the east side, you have this group, this regimental combat team. They had one day when they were told you had to assemble army forces and move to the east side. And one day to pull together this regiment. They scrambled it together, this team from different locations. One of the companies was made up 70% of people that were on early release from the stockades. So they, some of these people were not regular infantry troops that were trained. They were kind of scrambled together, and they only had about 3,000 over here on the army side. And the main base of all our troops was down here in this town called Agaru Ri. This was a relatively secure position. These positions were more extended, and this because we still had orders to push all the way to Yalu River. So we knew Chinese were in the area. Our intention was not defensive. We were going to push out in strength. So to maintain a connection with these troops to the main base, we had two little companies. We had about 250 that were going to hold these positions on this, what this road is called, the road. That was going to keep this open, have a line of supply between our two. What we didn't know was that there was multiple Chinese divisions. Each of these divisions had somewhere between 15 and 20,000 troops all surrounding our, just completely overwhelmed and out. So these troops tried to attack forward, immediately ran into trouble, right? Immediately ran into a superior force, so they kind of pulled back. And the Chinese attack on the night of November 27th, 1950, they attacked all of these people. Well, to start talking about what happened on the west, it shows in this side, okay? So you can see this road. This road here, the main service road, is this road here. And if you look at this company, this little divot in the road, this is called Fox Company. They're right here, this hill. You can see on this hill, this is on Google Maps today, by the way, which you've not changed in 70 years. It just looks the same, basically. Maybe the water level in the reservoir has changed, but the ground is almost identical. You can kind of see, if you can see the terrain, I tried to pull a 3D picture of how this position would kind of command the road all the way down here and down this way. And this is where they put the one company. The other companies here on this road, they kind of command the rest. This hill was called Turkey Hill, because on Thanksgiving a few days before, that's where all the Marines had their Thanksgiving dinner, and it was covered in turkey bones from there. So they called this turkey. So these two companies were holding what was the connection between this town where all of our other Marines were, Yudongni, and Agaru Ri, where the main base was, which is about 14 miles of road. Two little companies had them. This is what this road looks like. This one vehicle. So one tank on that road, one truck that gets disabled, they are trapped, right? So very difficult to hold the road open to walk maybe two people abreast. So Fox comes here, Charlie comes here, the Marines are there, the road to Agaru is down here. There's a little saddle between these two hills here, which is important because when the Chinese attack, they attacked up this road as well as over the saddle here over. Fox Company set up, this is from one of the interesting books on this topic. Fox Company sets up their perimeter like this. Here's the road that they're at. Here they set up their squads facing inland, and looks like this part is empty towards the road, but what they have is all their heavy machine guns covering the road. This part here is where the Chinese are going to appear. This position here, you see it's named Caparada. This is an important position. This is where the Chinese almost broke through. They killed everybody here except for Caparada and Benson. Those two guys alone held off an entire Chinese attack. And this is an actual picture of Chinese attacking up the hills. Okay. could just see they're just coming in waves, right? And the way the Chinese would attack would kind of be in three waves. The first wave would be armed troops, right, with their guns. They were equipped with quilted gear, but on their shoes they were like Converse, like canvas sneakers, right? So not well equipped on their feet, but their headgear, they had weapons, they were okay the first line. The second wave would come, they wouldn't have weapons. They would pick up the weapons from the first wave. So they were just, they had no artillery, no air support. Their plan was just human waves of numbers to overrun the... So they climb up this hill. Imagine kind of how scary that would be. I mean, you're better equipped, you have better defensive positions, but they're just coming in waves at you. No matter how much you shoot. So they were, the Chinese attack over the saddled land, up the road, and completely surround both of these companies. This is an actual picture of somebody's foxhole that they took during this battle. And as you, I mean, you can see, it's nighttime when the Chinese attack, it's cold, it's dark, it's not good visibility. Right? And you can imagine having to hold this position with hordes of people running at you and trying to defend yourself. A lot of times you couldn't even see until the flares would come up at night, and then the Chinese would be immediately on your position. They talk about the mortars. You know, a mortar, you're supposed to, it's like kind of personal artillery that you were supposed to send no closer than 100 yards. Right? A mortar should never be shot closer than 100 yards. And they were having to shoot mortars almost straight up, like 20 yards away, to defend their positions in this scenario. So, difficult, right, circumstances to defend yourself. Scary. And people, a lot of them, no real combat before. Here's Cavarotta. I told you about him, right? He held this position by himself. Everyone in his squad was killed. He held the position by himself. His foxhole mate, who's Ken Benson, had been hit with a grenade in the face and he was blind. Neither of them had any basic training. They were both from reserves who had been called in to the Marines, but they hadn't even gone through basic training, but their sergeants and their captains in Korea had trained them so well that even though Benson couldn't see, so he couldn't shoot, to reload. He could do it by feel while he was in the foxhole. So he was sitting low in the foxhole reloading. Cafferato was by himself against these hordes of Chinese coming up the hill shooting, and Benson would hand him the gun and they'd switch off and reload. And it got to hand-to-hand fighting. The reason you have this here, this is an entrenching tool. He famously used his entrenching tool on a baseball bat. They would come throwing grenades, and he was swinging at these grenades with his entrenching tool, hitting them away, which he said was remarkable. His adrenaline must have been fueling him because he said he was a terrible baseball player. But he wins the Medal of Honor for holding his position, single-handedly prevented Chinese from breaking through that. The captain of this Fox company was told, look, you can abandon your position. You can come back to Hagaru Reef. You guys can get out of there because we know you're overrun. Bill Barber, the captain, says, no, we will hold. I'm going to stay, because if we go, all those Marines up in Yudami are going to be cut off. We are the only ones who command this road that hold it open for the Marines to retreat back to Garu Reef. So we've got only 250 soldiers, and we're completely surrounded. We're going to hold this position so that they can go for 6 days. Their perimeter keeps shrinking, right? Started with 250 people. When they walked out of there 6 days later, they had 82 that could walk out. So they had tremendous casualties, but they held the position. And so he also wins the medal. 17 people won the Medal of Honor in this battle. So completely surrounded. You can see if he abandons, these Marine regiments have nothing. Right? If this road closes, there's no way for them to get back. They're all encircled by the Chinese, but they hold their position long enough that when the Marines attempt to break out, they're able to come through and get by. Another Medal of Honor winner, James Johnson, he's with these Marines up here. When they're evacuating his position, his troops are sneak attacked by people, by Chinese wearing the uniforms of South Korean soldiers. So they pretended to be allies. They did a sneak attack on his group up here as they're trying to exit he takes a position kind of exposed with his machine gun to hold off while the rest of his platoon leaves. Last scene, fighting hand-to-hand with the Chinese as they're overwhelming his platoon. Body's never recovered, but he also wins the Medal of Honor and his platoon gets out. Amazing acts of sacrifice by these just tremendously young guys. He had just left for Korea in August, right? He dies in December. Left for Korea in August, 5 days after his first daughter. So, tremendous sacrifice that these people are making in a country thousands of miles. This guy is, just looks like a Marine. Just look at this guy, right? He is a Marine legend. His name is Chesty Puller. And he's the one, you've probably heard this, some of his quotes. There's a famous quote at this Battle of Chosin from the commander of all the forces, Oliver Smith. The general says, retreat, heck, we're just advancing in a different direction here, right? Chesty Puller has some very famous, let me see if I can pull up his quotes here because they're ridiculous. He says, look at the determination in this guy's face, right? He's a Marine legend. He's more decorated than any other Marine. He won 5 Navy crosses, which is the highest thing you can get other than a Medal of Honor. Won a Distinguished Service Cross from the President of the United States as well. People think the only reason he didn't get the Medal of Honor is because he was such a kind of so pompous about the Marines that other services didn't like him and they didn't want to give him the award. But the Marines love him forever. I mean, he's a legend. He says in this battle at Chosin, he's commanding the Marine regiments. He's the commander, he's the colonel commanding those Marine regiments in Vietnam. He says, "We've been looking for the enemy for some time now. We finally found him. We're surrounded." That simplifies things. And then he also says, "All right, they're on our left, they're on our right, they're in front of us, they're behind us. They can't get away this time." So, I mean, you can see the kind of determination in his face, right? This is the kind of leadership that the Marines had, right? They had this legacy and this leadership that this is the, you know, circumstances are impossible, yes, but it's all right. We handle that, right? This is the kind of thing we can, you know, the Marines love him, right? He's a legend. He also, one time, somebody's demonstrating a flamethrower to him, and he said, "That's all good and well, but where do you put the bayonet?" Right? So he wanted to, I guess, have the people that he set on fire. So, this is a famous guy, right? Famous leader. Effectively got the Marines to withdraw. Okay, East of Chosin goes so well. Goes well, it's on the west. This is this regimental task force that they just threw together. This M Company is the one that's made up of people who got released from the stockade. There's about 2,500 U.S. soldiers and 700 Korean soldiers. And they have some artillery to support them. They're set up on the east side of the river, kind of in two groups, with some artillery support. This is their view. This is a hill called Hill 1221. It becomes important in a minute, I'll tell you. And this is their view. Kind of there's a little inlet of the reservoir here from their position. And this is their view of when the Chinese attacked. If you can see, this is a nighttime photo. It's blurry, it's bad quality because it's old and it was in a battle. But these figures here are all Chinese soldiers coming down to attack their position. Also see the bodies. You can see this is what they're facing. Again, not clear vision, you know, just hordes of people coming at you. And they were attacked from all directions. Each of these companies was overrun. So they were able to hold their perimeters in places, but their perimeters were broken through on the east. Again, they have 15,000 to 20,000 Chinese against 2,500 troops. So just much more outnumbered than the Marines were on the west side. So this pulls back. This screen here shows these two here. And you can see the inlet of the reservoir and an intelligence team that they sent out here to go find the Chinese, and they did, and they were overrun. This was where their main headquarters for the regiment were, and they had a medical company and a tank company here that they were trying to get up here to help. But when they were overrun, their positions were destroyed. They tried to go past this hill 1221. That was the hill I was showing you in the picture a couple of try to send a medical company. This is all their medics, their ambulances, their medical gear, and the Chinese. See right here, there's a little hairpin turn, the road. Chinese use that point to attack this medical company and destroy them. They had no help. Okay? Chinese then occupied this hill that, remember at the beginning I showed you the 5th Marines were on the east side and they had come back to the west? The 5th Marines had completely positioned themselves on this hill 1221 in really good defensive positions that they had abandoned. So the Chinese took up the positions we had built. Here you can see this hairpin turn. Again, this is Google Maps today. The road's just the same as it was. See, this is a very tight turn. Again, these are single lane roads where the Chinese attacked. It's not a good company. This is again that road. It's a single road. So they, after the medical company, we tried to set up a tank company. You can see the tanks. You got a cliff on this side and a ledge here, right? So there's just this much room. One tank gets stopped, the tank column is done. Right? And that's, they set up the tank company next. The Chinese were occupying this hill, they waited for him to get to their return, same thing. Attacked them and they stopped them. So this group here had no leave. They tried to dump supplies to help them. Sometimes it worked. This is a picture of supplies being dropped outside their perimeter. This is a picture they took from inside their perimeter. Supplies dropped outside their perimeter to the Chinese. So they're just basically holding on for dear life. They decided to join the two companies together. While they're doing this, the leader of this force, his name is Alan McLean, crossing this little causeway bridge, thinks he sees friendly soldiers, starts waving to them because they were shooting at him, and he thought it was friendly fire. He thought they were South Koreans, Chinese, so he gets killed. So then the commander of the forces is now this guy. Again, look how young he is, right? Commanding this entire force. His name is Don Carlos Faith. About 30. This is their position. I mean, the Chinese have all the high ground. This is a picture of their position here. They are exposed. They're trying to get cover as well as they can. Again, they can't dig in very well, so they just try to hide behind divots in the road. As Force Faith combines together here, the two groups that have been overrun, they pull themselves together. They do get across this little causeway bridge. They've got to get all the way to Hagaru Reef. This entire area is held by the Chinese. So they've got to find a way to get down this road all the way to Hagaru Reef. Udon, where the tank company and the medicine company had been, but they abandoned it. Forces abandoned it and came back here. So unlike on the west side, where the Marines held the road, nobody held this road. They occupied it. Task Force Faith tries to go down. They do have some air support from the U.S., but the very first thing that happens when they, by the way, they to move, they have trucks because they have hundreds and hundreds of wounded. Pile the wounded into these trucks. And as they're loading up the trucks, the healthy soldiers walk alongside or are driving them. The air support comes in because the Chinese are right on top of them and he calms the front and the hand. So right as they're, this beleaguered group is trying to escape, they get made. They still keep moving. There's a bridge that's blown by the Chinese here. Somehow, they rebuild the bridge and move on. They had attacked in roadblocks here and here, again, this hairpin turn. Lieutenant Colonel Faith is mortally wounded fighting. He had to leave the trucks. The Chinese, by the way, are just shooting at the drivers of the trucks because as soon as they stop a truck driver, the truck is stopped and the convoy stops. But even though this is only 8 miles, to walk it in probably 4 hours, right, or 3 or 4 hours, it's taking days for them to move. The truck gets stopped again. There's a roadblock. The Chinese put it the hairpin turn. Lieutenant Colonel Faith leads an assault up this hill, you know, all these defensive positions that the Marines built. Of course, by himself gets mortally wounded. All the gear again, they take down to this town of Hudong, and they realize there's nobody there for us. They've left us. But at that point, basically demolished, and some of the survivors cross over the Chosen Reservoir. They had iced over in the inlet, so they're actually walking across just scattered stragglers coming in. That the east side was completely destroyed by them. A couple little points about the battle in the air. See the napalm, they were supported by these Force Air fighters that had been fighting in World War II. This is how close down low the fly over. First African-American airman, Navy Corps, right? Top Gun, Navy pilots, the very first African-American, Jesse Brown, he fought in this battle. the 20 sorties, and then on the 21st sortie, plane got hit by a small arm fire and crashed way up. This is where the children are. Forces are down here. The plane crashed up here. Man, Thomas Hudner intentionally crashes his plane next to his so that he can go try to save him. Because they saw him waving from the ground after he crashed. Legs trapped.
Oh.
So, his legs trapped. And so
we have it over here at least. Oh, there it goes. Try this. His legs trapped, and they can't rescue him. And Hudner stays down with him for hours and hours and hours as it's getting dark, and they're worried about the Chinese overrunning the position. The plane was on fire. He put out the fire with snow. He tried to get an axe to chop out Jesse Brown, but he couldn't get him out. So unfortunately, he died here. Hudner got evacuated by a helicopter who had landed. Hudner wins the Medal of Honor for trying to rescue Jesse Brown, but Jesse Brown. So they ended up actually napalming that the Chinese. But important hero in the battle, and also for African Americans. Another thing with the air support, there's this bridge that they were retreating out of Chosin that the Chinese had blown. You can see it's just a giant gap. They've got to bring tanks across this bridge. And so what are they going to do? They airdrop in 4,000-pound segments of bridge. They airdrop by parachute these eight segments of this bridge that went 27 yards of the, or 27 feet of the 29 they needed. They built the other 2 feet with plywood. Somehow they got the tanks across. So they dropped these from these cargo plane boxcars. Another thing that's really funny, they ran out of mortar ammo, 60-millimeter mortar ammo, and they would call this mortar ammo Tootsie Rolls. And so they when they're calling for a supply, they're like, we're out of Tootsie Rolls, send us more Tootsie Rolls. So for whatever reason, the guy on the other end at the supply station doesn't know that that's a mortar round, so they send them tons of Tootsie Rolls. They send them actual Tootsie Rolls, just tons of Tootsie Rolls. Which turned out to be great in the end. They needed the mortar ammo. They didn't get that. But the Tootsie Rolls, because it was so cold, Tootsie Rolls are hard anyway, right? So they could put them in their mouths, and it was just like eating a normal Tootsie Roll for them. It really wasn't different because it was so cold. They would use these Tootsie Rolls because you could make them malleable, right? And then you would freeze. They use them to, like, plug bullets. So amazing. So the Marines, like, ever after, loved Tootsie Rolls. So this retreat, there's additional fighting all the way back. They retreat all the way to the ocean. And is it a win or a loss? You pick some pictures of the retreat. I mean, we lost the geographic territory, so in that respect, the Chinese won. But if you look at the casualty reports, I mean, there was amazing what they were able to do under circumstances. A retreat, a fighting retreat like this is one of the most difficult to pull off. So if you really think about the casualty counts and the and what they were able to accomplish, the Chinese were trying to destroy. If they didn't, still effective fighting force for immediately after the battle. See them getting out. So both sides probably could claim victory. Certainly a loss for MacArthur and his strategy, but not really for the Marines. This is a legendary, and for the Army who fought there, a legendary stand by them to pull out and rescue their fellow men. That's, you see hordes of soldiers on the road in this retreat. I just like looking at these pictures. I mean, you saw how young the picture of some of these soldiers looked, Lieutenant Faith or William Windrick, but see them at the battle, see their faces, just the wear, struggle. It's some of the most powerful, I think, pictures of soldiers that we have. So, just in sum at the end, there's about 17,000 total casualties for the U.S. out of our 30,000. Right? But 7,000 of those are non-battle, meaning frostbite. About 1,000 killed, 5,000 missing, who we also presume killed, about 6,000 total killed, 4,500 wounded, but the Chinese lost probably 30,000 killed, 30,000 frozen, and much worse protection than we did. Some estimates as high as 60,000 for the Chinese. I just think these pictures are interesting. Just as this really doesn't have anything to do with the Battle of Chosin except for kind of an aftermath. China, this is a nighttime picture of the lights in North and South Korea. To see nothing. Other picture. Nothing except for Pyongyang, the capital. Or nothing in that country. That's what we were able to protect for the South, right, through this battle. I think the Chosin Reservoir is important. It's kind of a turning point. I mean, we had never really lost before this, right? We come off real high in World War II in the Incheon Landing, and this Chosin battle was kind of a wake-up call, right? The rest of the Korean War, a lot more like what we saw in the Vietnam War. So, anyway, in summary, though, soldiers able to protect this, right, these lives and civilizations for the rest of South Korea, this is what we're able to obtain, right? And also legacy that they left for all of us. So I think a lot of lessons of courage and fortitude in very difficult circumstances. So thank you. And if, I know we're a little bit over time, so if there's any questions, I'm happy to ask, but if we're out of time, that's fine. So.
Questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of our clients is Wills and Trust Forum. I really didn't want to talk so sad about the Chinese. Somebody had written a book. He was one of the two. But it seemed like the author that wrote the book had gotten seemed like been some healing or something. But in this moon outside the hospital, they're like all around the hospital.
They had to turn around and shoot inside their perimeter because they were fending themselves 360 degrees. And the other thing that was scary for them, the Chinese would play dead. And so then they would go up to try to, like, just kind of dress the battlefield and do mop-up, and the Chinese would pop up and shoot them. It makes you, puts you in terrible decisions, right? Like, why just kill everybody who's on the ground because they could pop up and kill us, right? Or do I try to be humane even though I die as a result? Terrible decisions. Some more questions.
I'm not on a question. I just have something to say. I just think it's amazing how these people actually went through something like that. Most I've really seen is Modern Warfare or Game Buster.
Yeah.
So, actually really amazing.
I feel the same way. Absolutely.
So, when some retreat across the frozen lake,
yeah,
right? Like that, the lake frozen just that. Pedestrians could cross it, no trucks or anything.
No trucks, yeah. Just, I mean, I don't know. No trucks tried to pass over the ice. It was just people on foot. Yeah.
Okay. And then when someone crossed over the lake, they walked all the way back to...
Right. They walked all the way back. Well, they walked to Hagaru Ri, where they regrouped with our forces, and then the forces together retreated all the way back to the ocean.
In truck and...
Yeah. But or walking. I mean, you saw the last pictures. There was a lot of them had to walk the rest of the way, if they could. Right, yeah.
So when my dad served there, he's from Samoa, and first time ever seeing snow. Yeah, he's fighting. So as you can see how innovative Marines can be, and he was a Marine also. So when they were fighting, the ground was so hard, and they usually dig down deep, but they couldn't. So they actually made their foxholes all, they had more time. They made their foxholes with the dead North soldiers, and then they would pack them with snow, and so that was an up a foxhole instead of down. So that's my dad's story that he was always telling them. Dad, don't tell that story. We have Asians with us. Sure enough, he still told the Korean dead soldier story. I'm just like, yeah, my dad served.
That's absolutely, though. That's a lot of the records will confirm that's what they did with their fossils. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I watched a bunch too because look, I'm an employment lawyer. I'm not a historian, right? But it was very rewarding. I mean, I encourage all of you, if you had time, it's something worth reading about. The stories are just remarkable.
This was a great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.